This is The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. In today's podcast, I speak with the one and only Judge Andrew Napolitano, the controversial Fox News senior judicial analyst and host of The Liberty File on the Fox Nation streaming service. Now, before I get to today's show, I do want to ask you to please subscribe to this podcast, The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie, by going to reason.com/podcasts and signing up to get it automatically. You can also sign up, of course, at Apple, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. We release new episodes every Wednesday, and recent shows have included what I think are pretty fun, interesting, informative, and very freewheeling conversations with characters such as Fox News' Greg Gutfeld, Oscar-winning filmmaker Errol Morris, and hardcore history host Dan Carlin, who has a great new book out called The End Is Always Near. Please also check out The Reason Roundtable, a podcast that drops every Monday and features me, Catherine Mangu Ward, Peter Suderman, and Matt Welch talking and, if I'm being kind of honest, fighting about the top stories of the week. And subscribe also to the Soho Forum Debates. That's a monthly podcast of the debate series we sponsor in New York City. It's really good fun. Find all of these at reason.com/podcasts. Now, let me tell you a little bit to start the conversation with Judge Napolitano. Since joining Fox News in the early 2000s, nobody on cable has been more consistently and more uncompromisingly libertarian than Andrew Napolitano, a former New Jersey Superior Court judge, hence the honorific title judge. During the administrations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama, he inveighed against the growth of the federal government and overreach by the executive branch on what seemed to be an hourly basis. Now, Donald Trump has earned Napolitano's ire. The judge stresses that the allegations coming out of recent congressional hearings aren't enough to convict the president of bribery in a court of law, but they are enough to allege them for the purposes of impeachment, and the judge stresses that impeachment is not a legal proceeding, but a political one. The judge in our interview also lays out four more articles of impeachment that he thinks the House Democrats will probably bring against Trump over the next few weeks. Judge Napolitano finds it unlikely that the Republican-controlled Senate will vote to remove the president, but he also stresses that the bigger problem isn't Donald Trump or what's going on right now, but it's the way that the federal government continues to arrogate power to itself over time. We talk about that, about government overreach, about Donald Trump's bad behavior, about why the Democratic candidates are all terrible for the presidential nomination in 2020, and much, much more. So without further ado, here's The Reason Interview with Judge Andrew Napolitano. Judge, we're going to talk about impeachment and the Constitution.
Pleasure, Nick. You look very good in my chair. I don't know how well I look in the guest chair.
Okay, well, you know, now the hunter has become the hunted.
Oh, only you could put it that way.
You are one of the most outspoken libertarian defenders of constitutional government, of limiting the executive branch as well as the government altogether. What is the case that Donald Trump has committed impeachable offenses?
Well, the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee have unearthed enough evidence, in my opinion, to justify about three or four articles of impeachment against the president. We have to start this conversation by underscoring the fact that impeachment is not legal. It is political.
Right.
Its only constitutional base is treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. One of their counts is bribery, which I'll explain in a minute.
Okay. And but that other high crimes and misdemeanors, doesn't that kind of open it up to
yes.
What I know you've quoted him at length, but Gerald Ford as a congressman in the early 70s, before
yes.
he was vice president, before Watergate,
yes.
he said, you know, an impeachable offense is whatever Congress decides, the House decides on a given day.
And he made that statement based on a phrase in the Constitution, which says the House of Representatives shall have the sole, S-O-L-E, power of impeachment. And another phrase in the Constitution, which says each House shall write its own rules.
Right.
So those rules don't even have to be fair, as long as they generate the support of the majority.
Right.
The rules under which the current House is operating were written in January 2015, when the Speaker was John Boehner and the majority was Republicans.
Okay. So that means the Republicans are going to be screaming bloody murder
about
that these rules are completely illegitimate. Where the hell did Shifty Schiff come up with these and all of that?
Congressman Schiff, whether you like him or not, whether you agree with him or not, is following rules that the Republicans authored four and a half years ago.
What are those three or four articles? Because when you go into impeachment, and I'm trying to channel this from 20 years ago,
right.
when Bill Clinton was impeached.
Wait a minute. Okay. You were a baby 20 years ago.
That is true, but I was precocious, Judge. Right. I was precocious.
Right. Here's what I think.
We had basic cable in the womb.
Right. So. Here's what I think the Democrats will want, Nick. Here's what I think they will advance. One is bribery. Mm-hmm. The allegation is, the technical definition of bribery is the failure to perform an official duty until a thing of value comes your way. And they will argue that the president's failure to disperse funds that the Congress ordered be dispersed until the recipient of the funds agreed to investigate a potential political mm-hmm. opponent is an act of bribery. That is enough, in my opinion, to make it over the threshold of impeachable offenses. I don't think it's enough to convict of bribery, but it's enough mm-hmm. to allege it for the purpose of impeachment. The second charge will be high crimes and misdemeanors, election law violation. The third crime will be obstruction of justice. The fourth will be interference with a witness. And the fifth may be lying under oath. Take that last one. There are reports based upon a letter that the General Counsel of the House of Representatives wrote to the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit mm-hmm. when in seeking copies of the grand jury materials in the Mueller investigation and asked why. He responded, because we believe the president lied under oath and the Intelligence Committee, which is investigating mm-hmm. impeachment, needs this. The alleged lie under oath was the president's statement to Bob Mueller that he doesn't recall a conversation on the phone with Roger Stone over whether or not Stone had access to the WikiLeaks material. That's been established in the Stone trial, so now the Democrats are interested in pursuing it.
So
the other two articles of impeachment will be election law violation. The election laws, for better or for worse, I think this is a horrible law because it interferes with free speech, but it is the law. Asking a foreign government, the phrase in the statute is soliciting, mm-hmm. for assistance for a campaign is a criminal act, whether the foreign government provides what you ask for or not.
But wait, can't Trump just say, or I guess what I'm going to ask you is, what is the Republican response? Sketch out the president's defense.
Okay.
Can't he say, what are you talking about? I'm investigating, in 2017, Politico and a host of other publications said Ukraine was trying to influence the American election. So in 2016, Trump is just saying, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this corruption.
That is his defense. I've actually looked in the camera and said, you would be better off acknowledging the facts, mm-hmm. but arguing that none of this is impeachable, because you're going to lose on the facts. One of the reasons he used Rudy Giuliani as the emissary for this information is because of his and Rudy's belief in the attorney-client privilege, meaning Rudy could mm-hmm. never be interrogated and forced to divulge what he said to the president, the president said to him. Guess what? There's no attorney-client privilege mm-hmm. in an impeachment proceeding. That's why Rudy, and I say it's absconded, that's why he didn't honor the subpoena that was served on him. Mm-hmm. The last article of impeachment that I believe they're contemplating is the same one with which they charged President Nixon and President Clinton, and that is obstruction of Congress by refusing to permit officials of the executive branch to testify and refusing to permit those officials to have access to their own documents. The most poignant example of which was earlier this week when Ambassador Sondland, mm-hmm. Gordon Sondland, testified, they won't give me my own phone records and my own notes because the president has told them not to.
Right. Is that a legit, or is this also, obviously the branches of government are in tension with one another.
Right.
And is a lot of this, to go back to that idea, this is a political proceeding, not a legal one.
Right.
Is this just a flex by Congress to say, we have, particularly the House, we've hated Trump. We've wanted to unseat him from the beginning.
No question.
And now
about
we can do it. And all we have to do is get a majority of members of Congress.
You blame that on James Madison, not on Adam Schiff. That's the Constitution. Yeah. That's the procedure that's set forth.
I like to think of him as Mr. Dolly Madison. That's the real legacy, is the sweets and ice cream. It's all delicious.
It's actually three James Madisons, the same person, but three radical different thoughts. the third of which is the small government libertarian, but not the first two. But back to the Constitution, because the House can write its own rules, and because those rules say that a committee has subpoena power, you don't need the authority of the full House, and because there are no defenses except those which come from the Constitution, the president cannot interfere with the investigation of himself without risking this charge.
Right.
So when Clinton said to Betty Curry, his secretary, don't tell them, and when Nixon said to her, Ehrlichman, Haldeman, and Dean, don't tell them, and some of them did, they were still charged with this because the obstruction doesn't have to succeed from the presidential perspective. It only has to be articulated.
So
this is at least the Democratic argument.
How do you feel about this in any other context, virtually, in any other kind of legal proceeding? And again, this is a political proceeding. It's not a legal one. But you would be on the side of saying, you know what, the police or the investigating force should be held to the strictest standard of behavior. And, you know, the FBI, and you've talked about the, you know, the FBI, you know, will talk to you for hours so that you make misstatements, and then they can charge you with lying to the FBI or obstruction.
Right.
Isn't
well, which
same...
is why you should never talk to the FBI, even if you're in the right.
So, I mean, isn't something similar going on here? And does that risk taking, you know, what is effectively a political dispute?
You're asking me if this is just from a moral perspective or if it's constitutional.
Yeah,
it is absolutely constitutional. It is probably unjust from a moral perspective for the reasons you've articulated. The president gets no due process, but he's not entitled to due process under the Constitution until this gets to the Senate, if it gets there. And that's when there's a trial in the traditional sense, except that the jury is the members of the Senate.
So what is the essential difference? I mean, impeachment, you only bring articles of impeachment if you think the president deserves to be removed from office, right?
Theoretically,
I mean,
yes.
if you're on the team that is pushing impeachment.
Well, listen, if you push impeachment without a national consensus behind it, you'll suffer at the polls.
Right.
I mean, the remedy for an inappropriate impeachment is not stonewalling. It's getting your opponents driven from office, as Bill Clinton succeeded in with all of his impeachment prosecutors, except for one.
Who was the one who didn't?
Then Congressman and now Senator Graham. Correct. Yeah. The others were all kicked out.
Right.
One of them works for another network and has the morning show. And the show rhymes with morning show. So I'm not using his name on that network.
Are you allowed to say, can I say that
name? Sure, it's Joe Scarborough. Congressman Scarborough at the time. Congressman Jim Rogan, who's now a Superior Court judge in California and was defeated for re-election by Adam Schiff. So
this
is all connected.
Yet again, this is just kind of like, you know, next we're going to be talking about an Oasis reunion and Snapple coming. This is the 90s being redone, right?
Well,
it's nostalgia.
There's a lot of people who keep popping up in these events. So is an impeachment just from the moral perspective? Probably not.
Not in this case. I mean, in certain cases.
But is it constitutional?
Would you agree Nixon I mean, he resigned before he was officially impeached, but he should have been impeached, and he probably, almost certainly, should have been removed from
office. Well, Nixon is the extreme case, even though it was the cover-up of a two-bit break-in.
Right.
Nixon's statement that if the, which was made after he left office to David Frost, if the president does it, it's not illegal.
Right.
I mean, that statement shows an attitude about the presidency that the president can do no wrong.
Right. And now, do you think
Nixon's impeachment was led by Peter Rodino, for whom I was a page in the House of Representatives? Rodino's mind was absolutely made up before the first witness testified. Mm-hmm. And where did Rodino get all of his evidence from? A secret grand jury proceeding run by Leon Jaworski.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Henry Hyde get all of his evidence from? He was the chair of the Judiciary Committee when Clinton was impeached. A secret grand jury run by Ken Starr.
So
secrecy is often the birth of this material.
Yeah.
The politicians often decide ahead of time where it's going to go. They just have to make their case to their colleagues and to the public.
So do you think that you said that, you know, Trump should be impeached? Should he be removed from office based on what you've seen now?
I can't imagine that he will be removed from office.
Because the Senate is run by the Republicans and you need two-thirds of the Senate.
Yes.
But that's just doing math. Do you think, you know, in the interests of the country and the and not of like, you know, making us feel good about each other, but has he overstepped the bounds that the executive branch should, you know, be held to?
You know, he hasn't presented a defense, and I don't know if he plans to. The evidence of his impeachable behavior at this point, in my view, is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But being an ex-judge and being a lawyer, I have to withhold judgment until a defense is presented. Now, the defense would have to come out of the mouth, I would think, of people who've refused to testify. Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Pompeo, Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney, and the president himself, although the president is teasing everybody by saying he might testify.
You know, so far things are, however fractious they might be, they're proceeding along the way that the Constitution maps them out. Are we in a constitutional crisis, or when do we get to a constitutional crisis?
I don't think we're in a constitutional crisis. We would get to one if the president were removed from office and refused to leave. I mean, that would be a constitutional crisis. Mm-hmm. You could argue there's a mini constitutional crisis when the House demands something right. and the White House refuses to present it. That's why we have a judiciary. Right. Now, neither side wants to go to the judiciary because both sides want this over with
right.
so they can get into the 2020 political season. So I don't think we're at that crisis level. We're in a clash, but not a crisis.
What, so that'll come if this goes to the judiciary and then one of the sides refuses to abide by what the court says.
You know, Nixon famously refused to surrender the tapes. It went to the Supreme Court. It's a unanimous opinion, United States versus Nixon, which ordered the tapes surrendered, then he resigned, and we all know how that happened. So if the court were to order President Trump to surrender documents and he were to refuse, well, that would be a constitutional crisis. I happen to think if the court ordered something and the Supreme Court either didn't hear the appeal or affirmed that decision, I think he would comply because he would begin to lose his base if he thumbed his nose at the judiciary. I know he criticizes the judiciary. Right. It says there are Obama judges and Bush judges and Trump judges. I don't think that washes in this environment.
How do you think more broadly, how is President Trump doing as a chief executive? Do you feel like he's furthering the interests of the country? Do you feel he is doing damage to, if not the law, but the traditions and customs of the executive branch? Because it does seem like, you know, a lot of the criticism of Trump is less about the substance and it's more about the style. You know, is that a bad thing, or does that matter?
My column this morning at FoxNews.com and elsewhere argues that no American president in the post-Woodrow Wilson era has stayed within the confines of the Constitution. Right. And each president has more authority than his predecessors for the simple reason that Democratic Congresses give power to Democratic presidents, Republican Congresses, I can give you many examples of this, give power to Republican presidents, right. and that power stays in the presidency. So Donald Trump actually has more authority than Barack Obama did, who had more authority than George W. Bush did. Right. Etc.
What do you
think? Now, that type of authority to do things outside the confines of the Constitution, like use a drone to kill somebody in a foreign country, really rankles my libertarian values. That is far afield from the government that Madison, Dolly's husband, or Jimmy, however you want to refer to him, gave us.
So how do you pull this back? How do you and obviously you've written a number of books, but how do you pull this back many times?
Yeah. Can you pull it back short of a revolution or short of secession? I'm not talking about the South seceding. I'm talking about, I'm sure if California wanted to leave and the Republicans ran Congress, even though the IRS would lose a lot of money, they'd basically say go.
Yeah.
It's going to take something like that to turn this around, because all the power keeps going in the same direction, away from individuals, away from municipalities, away from the states, and towards the federal government. I mean, I have argued that the federal government stays in power by an act of bribery. It bribes the states with cash. It bribes the rich with bailouts. It bribes the middle class with tax cuts. It bribes the poor with welfare. And as long as it can keep doing that bribing, it's going to stay in power. It doesn't matter which party is in power. The mindset is the same. The Donald Trump that criticized Barack Obama has killed more people with drones than Barack Obama did. The Barack Obama who criticized George W. Bush killed more people with drones than George W. Bush did. I could keep going on down to Wilson.
Would you agree, theoretically, that if a president should be impeached when they exceed the powers allotted to the executive branch in the Constitution, right?
Everybody says everybody after Wilson would have been impeached.
Right.
I think you have to add to that when there is a perception in the land, a strong consensus that this has happened. I don't believe that that consensus exists today, which is why Mrs. Pelosi and Congressman Schiff are on a risky venture. Mm-hmm. Because they will have to confront the voters, whatever the outcome is.
Is part of you proud as an Italian-American that, Nancy Pelosi, Rudy Giuliani, that this is, it's a lot of Italian-Americans in the mixer.
Now, can I reveal to the people watching us now that even though your name is Gillespie, you are half Italian?
I am, yeah. The better half is Italian. Right?
Let's not go there, Nick.
Yeah. But what short of revolution? I mean, you write books, you appear on TV, you write columns. Talk about is part of this an education process to say, look, we're going to get the government. I mean, we can make changes at the polls, right?
Ways? I mean, I have argued that it doesn't matter. Unless a Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. Or Bernie Sanders, let's take two people that are really different,
right,
were president. I don't think it matters because they are basically bound by the laws, tempted by all the authority the president has, reinforced by generations of exceeding the bounds of the Constitution. It would take a real serious ideologue. In Bernie's case, somebody that wants to destroy the capitalist system and redistribute wealth. In Ron Paul's case, somebody wants to shrink the government down to the size it was when little Jimmy Madison wrote the Constitution. Short of that, the people that are always in power, now called the deep state, the bankers, the diplomats, the bureaucrats, will still have those great levers of power, no matter who is in the White House, short of these extremes.
So you're a systems man. I mean, so even if Bernie Sanders or Ron Paul were elected, they would be more expansive than they were going in.
No, I don't think so. I can't speak for Bernie Sanders, but I know Ron Paul very well. He is absolutely faithful to the small government principles that government is best which governs least. I don't think he would. This is prediction now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in his 80s. I don't think if he became president, he would be tempted to be a president like George W. Bush or Donald Trump.
Is there something in the 21st century that is accelerating the expansion of federal power? Because, the one thing you can say about Bush, Obama, and now Trump. I don't think Trump has been as expansive in most ways as Bush or Obama, partly because he doesn't articulate any rationale, hidden or otherwise, for what he's doing.
Well, let me tell you what he's done, hidden or otherwise, which is to borrow $1 trillion a year.
Right.
And that, of course, will one day consume us when there's so much debt that it can't be paid. People will either stop working or stop paying taxes, and then the government collapses. So the acceleration of debt in the 21st century will be the ruination of the federal government.
And this is not the first time that a mighty, vast country or empire falters, not because of external enemies, but because of debt, essentially.
Correct. It also falters, like the Roman Republic collapsed when they gave dictatorial powers to a general named Pompey to fight off pirates that were destroying it. And he fought off the pirates and won the wars and kept all that power.
Right.
And a generation later, there was no republic. There was a dictatorship.
Do you think that happened with the Patriot Act? And this, I guess, is another question for you. As we're talking about, all eyes are focused on impeachment, various parts of the Patriot Act are being, lengthened again or renewed again. Is this all a distraction ultimately from what really matters, which are the, actual limitations on the ability of the federal government to spy on people, to extract money, to extract compliance.
Federal government recognizes its own limits, and the courts have looked the other way. I mean, my problem with Justice, then Judge Kavanaugh, was this. I'm holding up my iPhone. What's in here? Personal, intimate, political, legal, medical. In his world, you don't need a search warrant to get in there. The government can just go in there. Where does that come from? The Patriot Act, the most unpatriotic, abominable piece of legislation in history since the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1796.
But do you see any, I don't know, you know, 5-6 years ago, people were talking about politicians like Rand Paul, Thomas Massie, Justin Amash in particular, as a kind of vanguard of a libertarian. They were a small L libertarian. They were all in the Republican Party. Amash, obviously, now an independent. What happened to that kind of boomlet of interest in people who were constitutionally driven and were talking about restricting federal power? What's going on with that?
I mean, Justin Amash and Thomas Massie are faithful to small government principles. Senator Paul has seen fit to work with the White House in order to achieve certain goals. I'm trying to be charitable here. Let's just say my voting record would be far closer to Congressman Amash and Congressman Massie than to Senator Paul. But I understand what it's like being a Republican in the majority in the Senate today. The other senator from your state is the majority leader. It'd be very difficult not to play ball. What, and he does stay faithful on
certain issues. What specifically has Rand Paul, again, other than kind of certain statements of support, what has he done that you think contravenes a kind of, his articulated.
You know, I would
principles.
Have to look at his voting record, but there are many, many issues in the Senate where the Republicans vote as one voice, and there should be a small government dissent.
Right.
Example, Justice Kavanaugh. This is a perfect example for the small government Republicans in the Senate, which, as far as I know, is just two of them, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, to make a stand for the Fourth Amendment. Instead, they voted to confirm somebody who will ratify legislation that permits them to be spied on. Justice Scalia told me that the court was being spied on under the Patriot Act.
So you are not a Kavanaugh fan at all, you think?
I'm not picking on him personally, but I'm not a fan of any big government person. Justice Gorsuch is a different story.
Right.
I know Justice Gorsuch's brain. We studied jurisprudence under the same person, a generation apart, but the same person.
Who is that, Ginsburg?
No, John Finnis, F-I-N-N-I-S, who's an Australian professor who taught at Oxford when Gorsuch was there and at Notre Dame when I was there. Finnis
are we
teaches,
outsourcing the Constitution to Australians? No wonder we're in such a
Finnis teaches that our rights come from our humanity, natural law theory.
Right.
Justice Thomas accepts natural law theory. Nobody else on the bench does. In the absence of natural law theory that our rights come from our humanity, as Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, then our rights come from the government, and the government that gives them can take them away. That's the view that almost everybody in the government accepts. That is absolutely contrary to first principles that Rand Paul should be fighting for.
Here's a question. We're taping this on, a Thursday, I guess, and there was a Democratic debate the night before. The Democratic candidates, do any of them strike you as particularly good in terms of being bound by the Constitution, informed by constitutional limits on federal power?
Absolutely not.
Having said that, there does seem to be a number of developments that are very consistent with a libertarian worldview. We're talking about things like winding down many aspects, if not the whole shebang of the war on drugs. Criminal justice reform, which Donald Trump has signed, has moved through the government. That we seem to be, on some level, retreating from the world stage as a military power.
All those things I support.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're being done in baby steps. But maybe that's the political reality. Even the president has to do them in baby steps. But I support, as you know, withdrawing from the world stage. I certainly support the right of adults to put whatever they want in their own bodies. So those things are in the right direction. That has happened by the federal government looking the other way, while state governments have permitted the use of certain recreational drugs. I think marijuana is the only one.
Right. There's a couple of budding cities and whatnot doing things like magic mushrooms and whatnot, but that's still down the road to come. Are you a drug user at all? Have you ever smoked weed?
No.
No?
No to both questions. I'm terrified I'm a health fanatic.
Really?
I am terrified of putting
so you're
the
like
wrong
Charles
thing
Atlas,
in my body.
Right? To keep it in the Goomba
Charles
tradition.
Charles Atlas' real name, as you know, was yes. Angelo Siciliano.
I absolutely know that. Yes. Yeah.
Very few people who know that. I am not like Charles
you're
Atlas.
Doing that dynamic tension
but
I do, 7 seconds
I do work,
a day.
I do work out quite regularly.
Are you optimistic? You know, or let me put it this way, because I think I know the answer to that, but given, you know, the way the kind of decline tale that you've told that, you know, since Madison, you know, things have just been going to pot ever since. But are you optimistic about the future of the country?
I am not.
Okay.
I am not. I think power will continue to grow. The federal government will continue to absorb debt. It will continue to bribe people to stay in existence and eventually will fall like an overripe apple.
But do you feel like you're freer now to live your life however you want today as opposed to 30 years ago or 40 years ago? And when I ask that, not based on the size of government, but by the whole offering of what you can do with your life, and that includes technology, it includes the decline of certain types of cultural gatekeepers that said no, or social,
well,
as well as legal
things.
The
decline of cultural gatekeepers about certain lifestyles obviously is liberating. But the same technology, which lets me put the works of Thomas Aquinas in my pocket, mm-hmm. also lets the government follow me wherever I go and record whatever conversation I have with Gillespie or whoever I'm talking mm-hmm. to, the Constitution be damned. Damned. That's the federal attitude about it. They could get rid of the Patriot Act. The NSA would still be spying on us. They could spy on the president, and he would still authorize spying on everybody else.
You know what? On that upbeat note, I think we're going to end it. We've been talking with Judge Andrew Napolitano. He's the senior judicial analyst at Fox News Channel, author of many books, including several bestsellers, a regular contributor to FoxNews.com. Judge, thanks for talking.
You're welcome.
This has been The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. I am your host, Nick Gillespie. If you liked what you heard, please go to Reason.com/podcasts and subscribe not just to this show, but also to The Reason Roundtable and the Soho Forum debates. Thanks for listening. Catch you again next week.